Hey, what's happening, San Diego? A wonderful Friday to you. A Friars Friday, finally a Friday, and we are with you on Gwynn and Chris here. Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr. is in Denver, Colorado, where the Padres will get set to take on the pesky Rockies. First of a three-game series tonight. Adam Klug is sitting in for Matt Scraby today. We go right to Coors Field, where my friend, my pal, my confidant, Tony Gwynn Jr. is there. Padres have arrived, ready to take on the Rocks. And they're on a pretty good hot streak right now, Tony, I heard, the Padres.
I've heard similar things. They're playing some pretty good baseball, and they come into a place that, you know, it's not a for sure thing, no matter how good or bad the Rockies are. It's just one of those type of places. On a side note, I will be in control of my mic this entirety of the show today. So,
okay.
we won't have to have any hot mic spots today.
Well, that did seem to create a lot of attention around our show yesterday. I was getting a text from my wife, even, who was not listening to the show, but apparently somebody she knew was listening to the show. So they texted her. She texted me. And I know you got a lot of attention about that. But we got through it safely. We
yes,
are still
we
on the air today, and that is a good thing. Here's another good thing for all you Padres fans. In about 7 or 8 minutes, joining us on the show today, our Friar Friday interview with none other than Big Smoke.
Big Smoke.
Who's Big Smoke, you ask? That is the name that Joe Musgrove will be going by this weekend. I don't know if everybody's aware of it, Tony, but it is Players Weekend in Major League Baseball. So everybody gets to put whatever name they want, right, on the back of their jersey. They get to have a lot of fun. The Padres have an interesting lineup today. I don't have their official lineup, but guys like Regandarea will be in the lineup today. That's Luis Arraez, for those wondering. And by the way, that's the best pronunciation I can do.
That was you rolled those R's,
didn't
you?
I think I got
you?
It. Yeah, La Regandarea. He'll be probably in the leadoff spot. Of course, El Ministro will be in there tonight. Manny Machado.
Very,
I think you know most of the names. I mean, Cronzone, Higgy, Action Jackson, Jackson Merrill. And Jackson Merrill, by the way, from what I hear, is debuting a Star Wars-themed lightsaber bat.
Lightsaber bat, baby.
My goodness. I can't wait to see this.
It's on the internet already. You can get a good look at it. It is pretty special. There's a lot of cool ones today going to pop off, including one that is a Tony Gwynn-themed bat you guys will get a chance to see. It's pretty cool. I have pictures of it, but you guys won't see it until the Padres release it. It is pretty sweet.
Well,
I must say this is the first Players Weekend that I've actually felt like, dang, I wish I could have been around for this, because
never got to take part in one of those.
I never got to take part in it. I wasn't, you know, the first couple iterations of it. I don't know. They did the emojis the 1 year. They've done different things. You know, now that the rules have loosened up, that kind of took away one of the perks of Players Weekend, which was you could wear whatever colors you wanted on your shoes.
And the shoes, that was a big deal for you. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking to a man who was fined by Major League Baseball countless times for wearing the wrong shoes.
I don't know about countless, but I definitely got a warning.
You
sure
got a few warnings along the way, yeah. But you wouldn't have got any such thing during Players Weekend. It'll make it a little more fun tonight and throughout the weekend, all around Major League Baseball. All the players will get to. Now, I think you should have a discussion with Dylan Cease, though. If you run into Dylan today, Dylan Cease's player name for the weekend is
Cease.
Yeah, great. I hope it didn't take him too long to come up with that. But anyway, everybody's going to have some fun with it.
Can I jump in here for a second?
Adam Klug, you want to jump in? Yeah, of course.
First of all, on the YouTube stream, we are showing Jackson Merrill's Star Wars lightsaber bat.
Okay, if you're watching the YouTube, yeah, you can see it. Oh, wow. It's like a bright.
It's pretty sweet.
Lightsaber-type blue. They should turn the lights out at Coors Field when he comes to bat.
That's what I was getting ready to say. It's like, do we need to get the black lights out? Because you're not going to really get the full effect of it with these bright stadium lights on.
But I got to say, I'm a little disappointed in Chris on his Luis Ariz name. It's not just for Players Weekend. La Regadera is his nickname. It's the Sprinkler.
The Sprinkler?
That's what it means, because he sprinkles hits all over the field.
I did not know that. Thank you for telling me.
La Regadera is Spanish for the Sprinkler.
I knew that was his nickname. I knew there was meaning. I didn't know what it actually meant, but that's perfect.
I don't think I can be faulted for this, Adam. I only took 12 years of Spanish.
It's only been his nickname forever, though.
But I don't believe they ever taught me the word for sprinkler.
I just wanted to clarify, it wasn't just a Players Weekend thing for Ariz specifically. That is his nickname.
That is his nickname. Well, he'll have it on his back today.
That goes for Manny, too. I mean, they're using Players Weekend to put their nicknames on their uniform.
Yeah, this is it's a lot of fun. It used to drive me a little crazy, but you know what? I've less loosened my reins on this. I think it's fun. I think it's high time that baseball let these players show off a little of their personalities. It's such a long season, and you're in the dog days of August right now, so to have some fun like this for the weekend, good for everybody, and hopefully it will keep the Padres' mojo going. 19-3 over the last 22 games. The Padres, you break it down a few different ways, Tony, and just about any way you slice it, it's really, really good. They're 7-1 at home during that stretch. They're 12-2 on the road during that stretch. They're averaging 6.1 runs per game. They're allowing 3.1 runs per game. They've had more shutout victories than losses. They've had 5 shutouts, only 3 losses. They're 4-0 in extra innings, which puts them at 7-1 for the season. They're the only team in baseball that has lost as few as 1 extra inning game this year. And, of course, this is on the heels of last year when they couldn't win an extra inning game.
Right.
They have won 9 of their 19 victories by 4 or more runs. I know people were a little concerned. They're saying, wow, they're all these close games. How are they going to survive? They really haven't all been that close. I mean, half of them have been, you know, pretty comfortable wins. And, of course, they go for their 9th series win in a row tonight, which would be an all-time franchise record. They've had 8 series wins, 4 of them sweeps, after only 2 sweeps in the first half, Tony. You can't find a bad statistic to support the Padres since the start of the second half.
Yeah, we tend to find them, though. Ain't that something?
That's why I thought I'd go through and get some good ones out. Try to get everybody feeling better.
You bring up a good point, because it just tells you we're all prisoners of the moment, and we forget, like, half of those games have been comfortable wins. It doesn't feel like that when you've run off 2 of 3 that maybe weren't that, you know, that much of a space in between. But this team is playing good, man. As I said, you want to come in here, take care of business, but you just know this place is it just has been. It's not a nightmare, but it's like a twilight zone. You don't really know exactly what's going to happen, how weird it could be. But coming into this series, man, the Padres, they are. This is exactly as Mike Schilt probably pictured it in his head.
Yeah, he couldn't have imagined. I mean, just a slow rollout that kind of builds to something outstanding in August, you know, to get you set up for the stretch drive.
100%. And now he's in a position where he can start kind of not auditioning, but finding out who are guys that he's going to depend on when the chips are down. You know, you're going to put guys in spots, and some of it will be the yesterday's game. Friday. So that would have been Wednesday's game. Wednesday's game. He didn't have to end up doing it because the Padres had comfort in that spot. But had that game been close, it was likely going to be without Suarez, who had thrown consecutive games. Tanner Scott had thrown consecutive games. So that would have been an opportunity for him to kind of get a feel for who else is going to be able to be in those spots.
Yeah, he's got everybody available to start the series. That's how you want it to be when you're going into 3 at Coors Field. And, you know, the other thing is, I got to say this, even though you don't want to really acknowledge it, the Padres have a losing record at the moment against the Rockies. They're 4-6. But the Rockies, for whatever reason, Tony, just don't play like they normally do when they're against the Padres. I don't think the Padres have played awful baseball. It's just that Colorado seems to come up with stuff they're not usually able to come up with.
Right.
You know?
I mean, so. and that's what happens when a team has confidence when they face you, right? I mean, this team, from the moment this season started, they faced each other, has been able to garner some confidence as the season has gone along. Now, this is as we saw at home, this was a different Padre team than they had faced the previous times. But that being said, when you're in the altitude and you're in this stadium here, we all know it. There's just no guarantees. But you'd have a hard time trying to find some flaws right now with the Padres and how they're playing baseball.
Yeah.
At this present moment, I mean, today you got Waldron on the mound. He was the first one to kind of come in here and show that okay, it could be done. And so let me stop talking right now because Big Smoke, I believe, is available.
That's right. I understand that Joe Musgrove is with us from Denver on our Friar Friday interview. Joe, always great to have you on, and we appreciate the time as always. Real quick, how are you feeling? I know that you came out of Monday's return to the mound and all systems were go, but here we are a few days later. You're coming up on your second start. Is everything still good?
Yeah, body's feeling really good. I'm fighting through a bit of like a little head cold right now, but the arm, everything feels good. It bounced back pretty well.
Joe, I've been trying to impart on our listeners how difficult of a process it is for, I mean, any player to kind of deconstruct their mechanics and then put them back together. That's usually an off-season gig. This has been put on you to do during the season. Can you, in layman's turn, kind of explain some of those adjustments that you've had to make in order to put yourself in position to be able to pitch again?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things that go into it. I honestly, this is kind of probably an unpopular opinion or an unpopular thing for most people, but I feel like I make my best adjustments throughout the course of the season. You know, you spend all off season working on movements and delivery and throwing bullpens. And then there's something different about getting there with a hitter in the box in a stadium with the lights on. And, you know, that slight bit of added intensity tends to kind of pull you out of those movements sometimes. So I've always felt the ability to throw, you know, 100 pitches at max effort in the season and make adjustments throughout the course of a game. I feel like I maintain those movements much better when they're done at, you know, a max effort. And my body understands that this is the exact result we're trying to get, not, you know, an 80% version like I would do in the bullpen. So, you know, in some way, it seems easier for me. I know there's a lot more risk of, you know, changing delivery and even changing, you know, pitch metrics and pitch grips and stuff. But I've always done well, you know, reacting to that stuff in the season. So throughout the course of the, you know, the IL stint, I had the luxury of having, you know, what I knew was going to be about 2 months of time. So we kind of broke it down and started doing a lot of drills in the weight room and, you know, stuff on the mound, just dry reps with the water bag and, with the 3D strap and bands and stuff, just trying to recreate movements and ultimately get my ranges of motion opened up more and more without even, you know, having thrown a ball yet. So by the time I do pick up a ball, my body kind of falls into those patterns of what I've been doing for the last 3 weeks without a result, you know, without a result to follow the movement. You know, you kind of can do the movement and feel good about it without, you know, throwing a pitch and seeing the pitch go way wide or way high. You can kind of really just hammer in the movements and then slowly start introducing them into catch play. And like we talked through that first few weeks of my throwing program, it was a lot of long toss and, you know, minimal intensity behind the throws, but a lot of intent in the movements themselves. So I was able to slowly transition those movements into an actual throwing pattern and eventually into the mound.
Well, it worked beautifully. Great return to the mound for Joe Monday night, and he'll be back on the hill Sunday in Denver. Joe, you've had a lot of big starts in your career. I mean, obviously the Mets game, no one will ever forget that one. You're no hitter. A couple of other playoff starts, some World Series appearances with the Astros. How was Monday night for you? I mean, is there a little added stress, nerves on that, just in terms of going out there and, you know, having to actually do it and make sure that, you know, you felt all right? And was there a sense of relief / accomplishment as you came off the mound Monday night?
Yeah, there was, you know, a lot of anticipation going into that, but I felt oddly, you know, comfortable. You know, a big part of that is due to the way that these guys have been playing. You know, I felt very confident that if I can go out there and get, you know, at least four innings and, you know, keep it under one run, you know, one or zero runs, I feel like we'd have a good chance of winning that game. And obviously walking off the mound to a standing ovation, having gone scoreless, feels extremely good. You know, the welcome back from the San Diego fan base was incredible. But, yeah, it feels good to walk off there with a scoreless outing and kind of have that, you know, that strong base to stand on as I'm, you know, continuing to build up and pitch count and stuff. But yeah, I felt very comfortable. I put a lot of work in. I felt confident. I had a good scouting report on those guys. I had, you know, a lot of things that kind of matched up with my strength. So I felt really good going into it. But yeah, there's that uncertainty of, is all this work that I did going to translate in this first one right away, or is it going to take me an outing or two? And I felt pretty good. So.
Big Smoke, a.k.a. Joe Musgrove, joins us here on Gwynn and Chris Fryer Friday. And Joe, I want to go back to the buildup to that start, because you had made some starts before going on the IL, and you kept feeling that pain. So you just walked us through kind of, you know, building yourself up to kind of feel. So the first time you picked up a ball and you're going off the mound, having had an injury similar to that, you get ready to throw that ball and you're waiting to feel it. When you didn't feel it, was there a sense of relief, like, okay, I'm on the right track at this point, I can feel it?
Yeah, there was a big sense of relief. You know, when I first picked the ball up and started throwing, it felt drastically different, in a sense that I can kind of throw free. And I feel like my mind and body were still kind of blocking me a little bit from trusting it, even after I had, you know, had the result of feeling like it was gone and that I was kind of moving in the right direction. You know, you try not to get too far ahead of yourself or try to increase the intensity too fast. And that was all kind of part of the plan when we mapped out, you know, my recovery and my road back to getting into a big league game was, you know, it might feel great at the start, but let's really follow this program up until a certain point. And then once we're off the mound and throwing bullpens and it feels good, then we can kind of, and I think you guys saw it, you know, it took me a while to get built up to being on a mound. But once I was on a mound, it was a matter of, you know, 12 or 14 days before I was back in the big league. So, you know, we got that done pretty quick, and I think it's, you know, a lot of it's the program that they wrote up for me, the training that we did throughout the time, and ultimately the time off.
Joe, every time I do a visit with you, I go back to a night that I'll never forget, because I happened to be doing post-game show the night you threw your no-hitter. It was the COVID, so I was sitting in my office at home when you called in, and I was able to do that interview after the no-hitter, and I've always thought that was a special night. But speaking of the no-hitter and why I'm bringing it up, you were there in Washington when Cease threw his. And from everything I read, you had kind of a lot to do with him finishing that game. And you were as excited as anybody that he joined you as a Padre with a no-hitter. Can you take us through a little of that?
Yeah, man. I mean, just the emotion. I feel like I was more stressed out than he was, you know. And a lot of that because I've been through it before. And the questions that he was asking me, I sat down there. Me, him, and Michael King sat down in the tunnel with him for probably the last five or six innings. And ultimately just we're trying to be there as, you know, a little bit of a distraction for him, you know, someone to talk to, someone to bounce ideas off, you know, talk about the game, talk about whatever. I was kind of just being there as someone that would be available for him. I tried not to lead the conversation. I just kind of sat by and let him bring up whatever he wanted to bring up. But I don't know how much I had to do with keeping him in that game. I mean, I was kind of just being nosy and sitting there, you know, hoping they would ask me for my opinion. And sure enough, Skip looked over and asked me, and I was like, the guy's throwing 100, man. I don't see any signs of slowing down. But, yeah, I think Dylan was in that position. And sometimes you'll see that from managers, and I think you know that, Tony. Like, yeah. Sometimes managers just kind of want to see where you're at, you know. If they ask him, you know, I think that's good, and he, you know, submits immediately, then you could tell that he's running out of gas and that's the end of the line. But Dylan put up a fight immediately, and I think his stuff that he was showing on the field, you know, kind of – fought the biggest case for him. I think his stuff was good enough to leave him out there.
Joe, how difficult has this year been for you? I mean, I know you pretty well, man. You keep your foot on the gas, and having to take that kind of time off, I can't imagine that being the easiest. Now, on the flip side of that, this ball club has been playing brilliant, so I'm sure that lightened it a little bit. But I would say overall, was this tough for you?
Yeah, this is one of the tougher seasons I've had to go through in a while. Ultimately, just because as a player, man, like you want to be on the field playing. That's, you know, where you have the most fun. That's where you feel like you're impactful. You know, you start thinking about, and I relate to Darvish in a sense. You know, you sit here and you're hurt constantly, and you know, I don't have what he has and a family and kids at home. And, you know, you start second-guessing things and wondering, am I spending all this time away from my family and not performing on the field or not even getting a chance to? There's a lot of things that go into that. So
yeah,
it's very frustrating as a player, but You know, I feel like I, you know, took myself out of the position of, you know, the desperation to get back on the field, and I really just tried to make the most of my time. And, you know, I feel like I grew a lot as a leader in the clubhouse and a lot understood myself a lot more and how this team dynamic works between the leaders of a clubhouse and the manager and the communication that's involved in that. You know, I've grown a ton as a player. Although I haven't been on the field, I feel like a lot more well-rounded player, having spent those 2 months really diving into some other aspects of, you know, of being a good leader and a good, you know, teammate. So it's frustrating not be on the field, but I feel like I did the most with it, and I feel like a more prepared player now.
Joe Musgrove is with us, our Friar Friday interview. The good news is for you, Joe, you're so awesome on these interviews. The bad news for you is that we could keep you all day, and we don't have time to do that. So I want to try to sneak one more in here. About this hot streak with the 19-22, you're on an Astro team, obviously, that won it all. You're on a great Padre team a couple of years ago. Not necessarily how this compares, but what is special about what's going on right now? And take us through, as best you can, kind of the feeling around this ball club at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the way we're winning that's the most exciting. You know, we've had our share of, you know, blowout wins in this stretch, and we've had, you know, plenty of games that have come down to one or two runs, and some games where we've been down one or two and fought back. And it seems to be someone different every night. I know Jackson's been on, you know, one hell of a tear and, you know, brought us back into a lot of ball games over the last couple weeks here. But, you know, we're doing it in every fashion. You know, we've won 1-0 games where our pitching's been dominant, and we've won, you know, 9-8 games where the pitching's gotten beat up a little bit and the offense has found a way to claw back in the game. And, you know, it's the things that we talked about early in the year about staying engaged for all 9 innings, you know, whether we're up or down, is continuing to stay in the fight and not giving away at-bats. And whether we complete the comeback and win the game ultimately, we're putting stress on their bullpen. We're getting in there and seeing more of their guys and things that are going to help us later on in the series. So I think we've really focused on, you know, doing the things that we talked about that are going to make us a good team. And ultimately that's led us to more and more wins. And, you know, you get on one of these stretches, you see some teams that ride the high as long as they can, and they lose that first game, and they slide right back down in that, you know, that negative direction. And we've done a good job of losing a game and hopping right back on another 7-8 winning streak. So it's just been a full team effort here. Everyone's happy, excited to show up every day. There's a different feel when you're winning often. You know, everyone comes in anxious and looking for an edge and a slight advantage over the opponent. There's just a full commitment from everybody, from staff to players to, you know, the way the front office has interacted with us. It's been, you know, a pretty fun season.
Last one for me, John, is more of a comment. I obviously travel with the team, and I sit in the back of that plane, and I watch pretty much every young guy sit with Joe. It's like I can't see Joe, but I can see all the young guys. What is it about that specific part of the team that seems to draw the best out of you? Because those guys seem like they just flock to you, Joe.
Yeah, man, I enjoy those guys, you know. It makes me a better player, makes me a better person to see those guys with that young, hungry attitude of, you know, a fresh perspective of what big league baseball is like. And then I think about, you know, my experience as a rookie and, you know, the things that could have been done that would have made my experience a little bit easier. You know, the transition to the big leagues a little easier, and a lot of it's just, you know, spending time with these guys and making them comfortable. You want these young guys and the rookies to come up and perform. They got to be comfortable and know that they can be themselves and, you know, play with some swagger and some attitude. And, you know, we try to preach that, you know, you respect the time of the guys that are in the clubhouse. And, you know, we have certain standards in place as far as bus times and treatment times so that everyone's able to get what they need in, but also, you know, allow room for the veterans and guys that are on a specific schedule. So I think ultimately I'm trying to get these guys as comfortable as possible, whether it's on the field or, you know, having fun on the plane or the bus rides. It's, you know, getting them adjusted and making sure they feel welcome and that they can go out and perform, you know, to the best of their abilities. So I've gravitated towards those guys well. You know, and we obviously have a couple poker games going on the plane, so I'm running the rookie game and Manny and Bogey are running the vets game. So some of these rookies are taking all my money, though, man. We gotta send them up to the varsity table.
Graduate them. Yeah.
That's
well,
right.
Well, Joe, continue wishing you some good luck here on the mound, and then after that, some good luck getting some better hands in the poker games. But always great having you on the show. Always a pleasure. And look forward to our next visit, and we'll catch up to you soon. Thanks again for being with
us.
Right on, guys. Always enjoy it. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Very good. Joe Musgrove there, our Friar Friday interview from Denver, Colorado, where tonight the Padres will take on the Colorado Rockies, game one of a three-game series. Tony's got to get to work because the game's getting underway shortly. Something you may not be aware of, Tony, but tonight your pregame lead-in is none other than me. I'll be returning
back in the saddle.
Back in the old saddle here. Tammy Leavitt came up not feeling great today. We wish him a speedy recovery, but you know it takes something to get Sammy out of the lineup. So
yeah.
I'll be sitting in on the pregame tonight. So maybe chatting with you a little bit later on there. But enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for everything, and let's go this weekend.
Yes, sir.
All right, Tony there, Chris here, Adam Klug alongside Gwynn and Chris until the Padre pregame show at 4:30. We've got a lot to get to, and we'll start getting to it when we come back on 97.3 The Fan. All right, Padres and Rockies coming up a little bit later on. Yours truly, Chris Ello, returning to pregame and postgame duties with Sam Leavitt getting a much-deserved rest today. I'm coming in at a tough spot, Adam Klug. Team's won 19 of 22 games. They lose tonight. Guess who's going to get the blame for that?
Yeah, the Chris Ello curse.
The Chris Ello curse. Well, you know, when I was away for a weekend earlier after the All-Star break, they won their seventh in a row, and I had a lot of people tweet at me and say, stay on vacation. But, you know, I came back, and they've continued to win. So,
you know, Woodsy took some time off in Hawaii recently. You took time off. Tony had off.
Right.
And the team has played so well and won so many games. They're doing well regardless of
it doesn't matter what. Yeah, we can't mess it up right now. Not even we can mess up what the Padres have going on. I know that everyone's worried about the Rockies because they give the Padres a bad time. And after all, I mean, there's, you know, reason to be a little concerned. The Rockies, get this, Adam. The Rockies are 6-4 against the Padres. Against the rest of the NL West, they're 7-23. And it's the same team that can't beat anybody. But for some reason, you know, they give the Padres a hard time. So,
Chris, I have said numerous times around the office that this team gives me a different feeling than previous teams.
Padre team.
Yes.
Yeah, the way they're playing right now, it shouldn't matter who their opponent is. So.
But that's the question I will pose to you. At Coors Field, which has been kind of a house of horrors for the team, do you still get the same feeling, or do you have a different feeling?
I looked it up today. Hasn't been as much of a house of horrors as you'd think. Padres all-time in Coors Field are 124 win, 140 loss. So they're under 500 there. But it's not an egregious disadvantage. Padres have had some big games there at Coors Field. I think Matt Kemp had the squad's first ever cycle at Coors Field. You know, they've had some moments at Coors Field, and hopefully they'll have some more this weekend. We got a Padre lineup for you. Share that, and then get into some Mike Schilt stuff with Ben and Woods today. I'll do my best to do today's lineup using the player names that they're using for the weekend. Leading off for the Padres today, designated hitter, La Regadorea. That is the sprinkler, Luis Arraez. Batting second, El Patron, Jerkson Profar. Batting third, Cronzone, Jay Cronenworth. These are their own nicknames, by the way. If you don't like one of them, don't write me. Number four in the cleanup spot, El Ministro, Manny Machado, third base. Batting fifth, X-Man, Xander Bogaerts. Batting sixth, Action Jackson, Jackson Merrill. Batting seventh is Freight Train, David Peralta. Yeah, he does that train every time he gets a... He's been hot lately, by the way, Peralta. Batting eighth will be Awesome Kim.
Awesome.
Instead of Ha-Seong Kim, Awesome Kim. Yeah, he'll be batting eighth tonight. And batting ninth, Higgy, Kyle Higashioka. On the mound for the Padres tonight, Wally. Matt Waldron. So it is Players Weekend. Rockies will be going with Cal Quantrill tonight, the former Padre draft selection. A lot more on the game in the pregame, which follows this show at 4:30. One more quick thing before I get to Mike Schilt. Want to let everybody know that next Thursday, that's August 22nd, just a few days away, 2 o'clock, Scraby and I will be out for a live broadcast at Casa Octavio. It is on the corner of 10th and J, down in the gas lamp. You should be able to find it. 10th and J is like a stone's throw from Petco Park. And if you don't want to come down to see Scraby or I, that's fine. Come down anyway, because we're going to be giving away 3 pairs of tickets to that night's game. Next Thursday's game between the Padres and the Mets. So 2 o'clock, live broadcast, next Thursday, Casa Octavio. Make sure you're there, if for no other reason, to try to win some tickets to that night's Padres-Mets game. Scraby and I, and Tony will be on the show, but he'll be, of course, up in the booth there at Petco Park getting ready for the Padre-Met game. That's next Thursday. I was going to say, write it down, circle it on your calendar, but nobody writes anything down anymore. You get your phone out, you plug it in. Next Thursday, 2 o'clock, make a note of it, be there. All right. Mike Schilt was there this morning, on with Ben and Woods. And, of course, things are flying along beautifully for the Padres right now. Ben and Woods had quite a few questions from Mike Schilt. Thought we'd want to hear some of Mike Schilt's responses to those questions. Here's the first one. Does Mike Schilt, has he taken a moment to appreciate the run that this team is on right now?
You appreciate and enjoy the triumph the club has. You celebrate with them. You know how much hard work, dedication, effort goes in the players to perform. And so you get, sometimes you step back and just appreciate a nice play or a big hit or, a guy making good pitches or, stepping up in a high leverage situation. So you do appreciate that. But, for the most part, you kind of got to stay on point, yourself, because you got a responsibility too to be ready for, any and everything. And, but Suarez, it's cool what they do when he comes in, to close it down. But I'm just excited that we get the opportunity to bring Robert in to win a ball game.
Mike Schilt, managing a team that is as hot as any in Major League Baseball right now. 19 wins in their last 22 games. And a lot of people have talking about the grit this Padre team has shown so far this year. What pops in Mike Schilt's mind when he thinks of his grit squad?
Yeah, we talked about it. You just mentioned one of them for sure. It's a 1-26 man roster, they're all like that. The guys that, and again, I respect the heck out of all of them, but, for Wadey to not, play as much as I'm sure he'd probably like, but, accepts the role that he has, fits in nicely when he gets called upon in the roles that he's been allowed and given. Been fantastic. Solano, same deal. Look up, Brian Hoeing's done a nice job coming in, being able to pick up innings in different areas has been really tremendous. Brian Reynolds came in the other day for a clean 8. A bunch of guys really looking to compete and stay ready for whatever the situation calls for.
I don't think it's possible to win 19 of 22 games unless everybody's pitching in. And that really has been the case. And I think it's been one of the really fun parts of this stretch. As good as Jackson Merrill's run was, and, I don't think any of us are going to soon forget it, honestly. I mean, to hit 3 tying home runs in a 4-game span, and then 2 days later save a game with a diving catch with 2 outs in the 9th inning, and do what he's done to put himself squarely at the front of that Rookie of the Year picture. But, as Joe Musgrove said, you can't just say Jackson Merrill has carried this team, on his back for this 19-3 stretch. I mean, everybody has contributed. Cronenworth hit a big 3-run shot the other day. Machado has gone, on a hot streak here. And he's up to 70 RBIs now, by the way, Machado. He's going to finish pretty close to 30 home runs, pretty close to 100 RBIs when it's all said and done. just like Manny always does, even though we were all concerned about it in May and June. Profar, you know, he won the Baltimore game right at the beginning of this stretch, two-home run game. Hasn't had as much magic, maybe in the last week or two, but, you know, Profar is still having an amazing season. Rise has contributed with his hitting. He's the only National League batter hitting over 300. And, you know, he continues to get the job done, set the table. Bogaerts had a really good hot streak right after the All-Star game. And that doesn't include Solano and Higashioka and Peralta. I mean, it's just everybody. They've all contributed, and the pitching's the same way. You know, when you think about Cease and his no-hitter, and you think about King and his consistency, and, you know, Waldron is pitching tonight, but, you know, Vasquez pitched a couple of good games during this stretch. Joe came back and showed up big the other night. And the bullpen, you know, everybody goes through some ups and downs. They've given some runs up here and there, but, you know, they mentioned Hoeing there. Hoeing's pitched 9 innings since joining the Padres. He's allowed 2 hits. That's it. No runs. Nothing off Hoeing. And he's done it, you know, as a guy coming in that rain game to pitch in late in ball games. Hoeing's been a wonderful addition. Jason Adams gets 7 innings. He's allowed 4 hits so far. No runs. You know, I mean, just. And then I didn't even mention Martin Perez. Martin Perez has started 3 games. Padres have won them all. He's got a 1.96 ERA. It's been a full team effort, and I think you hear that a lot. Everybody's contributing, but they really, truly are. They're all contributing right now. And that's the only way I think you can go 19-3. But next up for the Padres, starting today, 18 games in 18 days. They don't have a day off for quite a while. Starting today in Denver, does Mike Shildt plan for that?
I mean, there's a combination. I mean, you know, listen, we've got crystal balls. You know, we do take it proverbially one step at a time, but there's some planning that obviously goes into rotation. But, you know, who knows when the game starts, how things are going to go. There's always going to be twists and turns here or there. You know, there's planning on how we're going to be efficient with our pregame work and how we're going to make sure we're ready to play and have the appropriate mental and physical energy for the games themselves. And then there's, you know, the decision about when to give a guy a blow and make sure that, you know, we see the narrow focus and then also look at the bigger picture of what we're looking at from a, you know, season. So there's always a little bit of a marriage of both.
You know, I think it's interesting when you're riding a streak like this. I think it's a little bit like when you're pitching a no-hitter. I don't think you really want to mention it too often. But you're not going to run away from it. Everybody's obviously feeling terrific. Everybody can't wait to get to the ballpark like Joe was telling us. You know, everything's going well. People are all contributing. Can't wait for the next guy to come up and, you know, get the big hit. But I don't think you want to really overdo it. I think Mike Shildt's approach is probably the right approach right now, and that is to go into tonight's game with a record of 0-0. And I really think that's kind of been Shildt's thing. You know, I mean, he drove us crazy with that game-to-game mentality in April and May and June, right? All of us, you know, we wanted to hear him get angry. We wanted to hear him overreact to a bad loss. We wanted to hear him really lose it when they got swept at home by the Rockies. But you know what? Mike Shildt just went out and got ready for the next game. And, you know, this guy, right, is 2 years as a full-time manager, or his three years as a full-time manager of the Cardinals, they were in the playoffs every time. And more times than not, 2019, 2021, they did it, the Cardinals did, by getting really hot in the second half of the season. He's always had the ability, it seems, to really catch fire in the second half. And obviously that's what he's done so far this year with the Padres. So, you know, Mike Shildt may not always win a popularity pool with us or with the fans, but I'm pretty sure he's winning one with his players. And we don't always like when he's positive about every single thing Like, even the most negative stuff, he's still positive about it. But I can tell you one thing, the players probably like it. I mean, think about it in your own line of work, whatever it is you do. If your boss is out there complimenting you all the time, it never really gets old, does it?
Chris, you do an excellent job.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you so much for everything you do and contribute to this radio station.
It never hurts my feelings to hear that, and I don't think it hurts anybody's feelings, no matter what they do, to hear that. You know, we sit here and go, well, he's got to be critical of guys. Yeah, well, do you like it when your boss is critical of you? You have a down month in sales? Does he come over to your desk and go, you got to pick it up, man? Maybe they do. I don't know. I don't know how the sales world is these days, but... You know, I think most of us like to hear good things about ourselves, and I think we normally respond, you know, in a positive manner to that kind of stuff. Anyway, Cardinals, Mike Schilt before, Padres now. Similarities between those teams?
Yeah, I do. You know, it's something we continue to strive for, and that's just normalizing excellence of, you know, in competitions, you know, relative to regardless of who we're playing or what the circumstances are. You know, day game, night game, road, home, opponent. You know, we're going to be aware of the and respect our opponent, obviously, but, you know, it's really about, you know, what we do, how we do it, and how we do it together and how we execute. So.
And so it goes for the Padres as they try to keep it rolling tonight against the Colorado Rockies. We got an hour down. When we come back, not only a Daily Gambit segment, but I got a chance for you all to win some tickets to see Def Leppard and Journey at Petco Park. They're coming up on August 30th. Your chance to win is coming up shortly on Gwynn and Chris. Hey, rolling into hour number two of Gwynn and Chris. Finally, a Friday out there. Hope everybody has a great weekend lined up. Started off with some Padre baseball right here on 97.3 The Fan pregame show with yours truly tonight sitting in for Sam Levitt. You know, the fans who listen to Padre baseball, Adam Klug, especially those who listen to the pregame show, are going to terribly miss Sam Levitt tonight. I mean, they have just fallen in love with this guy. He is a hero to Padre fans. They cheer his name at Petco Park. He can't go anywhere without having to pose for pictures, sign autographs. The guy can hardly do his job. He's so well revered. But
where Sam Levitt goes,
the champagne flows. That's right. He said that at the beginning of last season. And we've kind of forgotten about it because there was no champagne flowing last season.
Speak for yourself when you say we've forgotten about it.
Oh, you
I think about it every day.
You obviously hadn't forgot about it. You brought it up, yeah. But Sam will be off tonight, so I'll be doing the pregame show. And it's going to be like old times because it's been a while. But we'll get it done, and it'll be a little after 4:30, and then at a little after 5:30, Cal Quantrill, the former Padre draft selection, we'll throw the first pitch of tonight's game to Luis Arraez, and the Padres and Rockies will begin their three-game series. The Padres, of course, begin play today. Really an almost unimaginable two games out of first place. That's it. Two games back of the Dodgers. The playoff odds for the Padres right now to reach the postseason, 95.5%. Even the Brewers only have a 95.8%, and they have a 9-game lead in their division. I don't know how they figure all this out. And as Tony said the other day, if the Padres lost two or three games in a row, those odds would go down to 85% just like that. But as it stands right now, 95.5 for the Padres to go to the postseason. Of course, they're in the middle of a wonderful pennant race for the division. The Dodgers on top, Padres, and the equally red-hot Diamondbacks are both two games back. All three teams, by the way, have played the exact same number of games. 122 games played, 40 to go. I say that because almost all year the Padres have played more games than everybody. So remember, they played the original two in Korea. Then they had hardly any days off the first few months of the season. So all year long, the Padres had played more than their opponents. Now everybody's finally caught up to them. But 40 games left and a two-game difference. Diamondbacks have won six in a row. They'll take that winning streak into Tampa Bay tonight against the Rays. Dodgers will take on the slumping Cardinals in St. Louis tonight. Tony's not here. So with Tony not here, Adam, you and I can play some scoreboard. Because I love playing scoreboard. I don't care if it's August. I just like looking at results of other games and how it impacts things. And, you know, I think it's fun to be in the middle of all of it. So, you know, we will play a little scoreboard throughout the evening. The one thing that the Padres have right now is a cushion in terms of getting into the wild card. They are 6.5 games clear of the Mets, who are the team that would have to catch and pass them. Of course, the Braves would also have to catch and pass them to keep the Padres from the postseason. But a 6.5 game opening at the moment. Of course, the Mets do come in here next weekend for four games. So no time to relax as the Padres get set to go into Colorado tonight. The Rockies, by the way, do have the worst record in the National League. If it wasn't for the White Sox, they might have the worst record in baseball. You know how bad the White Sox are, just for fun, Adam? I'll tell you how bad they are. The White Sox in the standings right now are 15 games behind the Rockies. So they're not only the worst team in baseball, they are by a large margin.
I heard a stat a few weeks ago when they're in the midst of their 21-game losing streak.
Right.
They not only had a 21-game losing streak, they also had a 14-game losing streak early in the year. The stat was, if you removed the 14-game losing streak and the 21-game losing streak from their record, they'd still have the worst winning percentage in Major League Baseball this year.
It is incredible that a team could be that bad in this day and age of baseball. But they are, and they're closing in on their 100th loss. They're only seven losses away from that at this point. All right, let us get into some scoreboard, some winners, losers, Daily Gambit, we call it.
Do you like money?
I think about money a lot.
Do you like money without doing anything?
Winning.
Do you want to make money while watching sports?
I think Washington is a mortal lock.
Washington! Woohoo!
If you answered yes, this is your segment. Just don't blame us when you lose.
Well, nothing is ever your fault.
It's your game. Take it.
Gwen and Chris go through the top bets of the day in The Daily Gambit on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, Daily Gambit. Gamble responsibly out there. We don't actually bet any money on this stuff. And we recommend that you don't bet a whole lot of money on this stuff either. But it's fun to pick the games. The Cubs won today. It's the only day baseball. They beat Toronto 6-5. Cubs blew a three-run lead in the ninth. Then won it on a Suzuki walk-off single in the bottom of the 10th. Cubs are trying to hang around in the wild card race, but they're 9.5 back of the Padres still. All right, some of the picks we made last night. Zach Wheeler was on the mound for the Phillies last night. His over-under was 7.5 strikeouts. I went under. And Zach Wheeler had six strikeouts, so I got that one. Phillies won the game largely in part because of a guy named Weston Wilson. I might be the only guy west of Philadelphia who even knows who that is, because he's like the last guy on my fantasy roster. But he hit for the cycle last night in just his 24th Major League game. He's like one of the fastest guys ever to do it. So that was kind of an exciting moment for the Phillies. They have won two in a row after struggling. Another one last night was pitcher Bailey Ober of the Minnesota Twins, 6'9" right-hander for the Twins. They'll be coming into town next week. His over-under was 5 2/3 innings pitched against Texas. I went over, and he pitched six innings last night, so I snuck out a win there. On to the WNBA. The New York Liberty, who have the best record in the entire league, they're 22-4, came into Los Angeles last night and destroyed the LA Sparks. 35-point rout for the Liberty. They were favored by 11.5. I took the Sparks at home. Lost that one. In that game, Brianna Stewart, Sabrina Ionescu of the Liberty, both had a point over and under of 20.5. So we asked which player would score more. I went with Brianna Stewart, and she did outscore Ionescu last night. So I won that one. And Angel Reese, 13.5 rebounds in the Chicago-Phoenix game last night. Phoenix won the game, but Angel Reese grabbed 15 rebounds. I went over. She went over. So it was a pretty good night for me last night. Adam, do you want to get in on any of these tonight, or do you just want me to do them? You want to have some fun and see how well you do?
If you'd like. I'm not a big gambler.
Well, I'm not either.
But I'm happy to weigh in.
All right. Padres and Rockies tonight. Over-under is 11.5 runs.
Combined?
Combined, yes. No, just for the Padres. 11.5 runs. Obviously, Coors Field, you can have easily a 12-run game.
Right.
But I just see Matt Waldron. Man, he's already pitched at Coors Field this year and pitched well. So unless the Padres are going to win 12-0, I think this is going to go under tonight. Do you want to take a guess?
I'll go contrarian. I'll go with the over.
You can take the over. All right. Dodgers are in St. Louis tonight. Dodgers are favored by 1.5 runs. Got to go with the Cardinals here. Like I said, we're playing scoreboard.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
While the cat's away, the mice will play.
Yes. No Tony Gwynn, so we can root against the Dodgers tonight.
Absolutely.
Not that he ever roots for the Dodgers, but he's not a fan of scoreboard watching, at least not until late September. I am a fan. Also tonight, the Pittsburgh Pirates try to snap their 10-game losing streak.
Boy.
Yeah.
They were in it.
It got away from them fast. They can thank the Padres for that.
Padres crushing the hopes and dreams of the Pirates and the Nationals this year.
The Jolly Roger has sunk. Pirates are home tonight. The Seattle Mariners are their opponent. The Mariners are favored by 1.5 runs. I would like to believe the Pirates could snap their streak, but Logan Gilbert is pitching tonight for Seattle, and he's one of the best in the league. So I'll take Seattle. All right, this is for you, Adam. Preseason football tomorrow. Do you even know who your Falcons are playing tomorrow?
I do not.
Really? See, it's true.
It's not a real game.
No, it's not. It's the biggest farce in all of sports. There will be people all over the country tomorrow paying full prices to go see these games that mean nothing. Baltimore is your opponent tomorrow. Ravens are favored by 1. just for you, I'll take the Falcons.
Let me just
here.
Say this. I know you said we're not encouraging people to gamble.
Yeah.
If you gamble on exhibition
football.
Oh, I've
said this before, yeah.
You've got real issues.
I've told people before, straight up, if you bet on an exhibition game, check yourself right into gambling rehab. You have a problem. If you need to have action on a preseason game, then you have an issue. You should not
just go
be
flip a coin and bet on that. I mean,
same thing.
Literally nothing to know about these games.
Dolphins get the Washington Commanders tomorrow, 4.5 points. The Dolphins are favored. I'm not trying to pick against my team, but I see no reason to ever give points in a preseason game. It's a 50-50 game.
So
I'll take Washington.
I think that's actually, that's the smartest betting theory I may have ever heard.
For take a preseason game?
Anywhere. Take the points in games that don't matter.
In a game that doesn't matter, you might as well get a few points. 49ers are favored by 1 over the Saints. I'll take the Saints just so I can stick it to Scraby when I see him on Monday. One more tonight. Caitlin Clark returns to the floor for the Indiana Fever. Her over-under is 19.5 points. She takes on the Phoenix Mercury. I must find this to be kind of an interesting matchup. Remember, Diana Taurasi of Phoenix was the one who was a little outspoken about Caitlin Clark not coming in and dominating the league right away. I think that's largely been forgotten, but I doubt that Caitlin Clark has forgotten it.
No.
Taurasi said, everybody ought to, take it down a peg or two on these kids coming into our league. You know, I still think Taurasi was kind of wrong to say that. I get what she was, you know, where she was coming from, but these kids, Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, and the others, have made it for a great WNBA season, and Diana Taurasi should be, honestly, I think, appreciative of that.
So let's take the over on Caitlin.
So I'll say over. Yeah, Caitlin Clark sticks it to Diana Taurasi tonight. All right. We'll have some fun with those. Results on Monday. All right, I promised you a chance to win a pair of tickets to Def Leppard and to see Journey. They're playing at Petco Park on August 30th. So that is 2 weeks from today. Tickets are on sale right now at Ticketmaster.com. Or you can win a pair right now. You have to call in and answer a trivia question. You know that's what I like to do. So wait till I give the question and then dial in 833-288-0973. First person with the correct answer. According to Billboard Magazine, I did a little research. Billboard Magazine has rated all of the songs ever put out by Def Leppard. What does Billboard Magazine rank as Def Leppard's greatest song?
If you can, trick question?
No. I mean, if you know anything about Def Leppard, you've heard of this song. Just a matter of whether you pick the right one. They have quite a few big hits. You got to pick the one that Billboard Magazine chose as the greatest song ever by Def Leppard. You come up with that at 833-288-0973. You'll go to the concert while we check traffic. All right, welcome back to Gwen and Chris. That little question created a stir, did it not, Adam Klug? A lot of people calling in to try to get the answer and win those Def Leppard and Journey tickets. Don't shoot the messenger here. I just looked this up. It's a story by Billboard Magazine. Says the 15 best Def Leppard songs of all time. So that's what I went with here. And with all due respect to Hans, who sent me an email, Switch 625, which I don't even know, was ranked 13th, Hans, so it didn't get close. But here's some of the other ones. Def Leppard's had a lot of pretty good songs. The one everybody was really excited about on the guessing and on the chat was Pour Some Sugar on Me. That came in third, according to Billboard. Photograph was number two.
But the inside, walk this way.
This was the number one song. Yeah. There it is. The number one Def Leppard song, according to Billboard Magazine. Very good, Adam. It's better to burn out. There you go. All right. Benoit called in. He was the one who identified the song Rock of Ages as their best song. There you go. Like I said, you may disagree. I might disagree. But the question was, who did Billboard Magazine choose? They chose Rock of Ages. Benoit is going to see Def Leppard and Journey in concert. Enjoy out there. And you can stop calling now, by the way. Phone lines are still going crazy. Sorry we couldn't give tickets to everybody. Our old friend John Heyman had an interesting article today in the New York Post. And Adam, maybe you even know, like John Heyman used to come on every week, and then that just ended. Whoever he was working with stopped employing John Heyman. What happened there? It doesn't matter too much.
Yeah, but I talked to Scraby. I think he's still an Odyssey MLB insider.
Scraby just doesn't get John on anymore then. So we're blaming Scraby for this.
Of course we are. He's not here to defend himself.
Yeah, that's right. It's an easy target. John Heyman reporting today in the New York Post, and I think this is, you know, the kind of news we want to hear right now, that Yu Darvish is indeed working out, and the hope is that Darvish can return to the Padres in September. One person close to Darvish guessed a return this year is 50-50. Another thought, Darvish's return chances are a little better than that. Obviously, he's out, undisclosed, family matter. We haven't really delved into that because it's really not important. You know, Yu Darvish needs to take care of what he has to take care of. But if he can come back and pitch for the Padres in September, What a boost that would be. Of course, we're still waiting on Fernando to come back, et cetera, et cetera. One more note from John Heyman that I think Padres fans will enjoy hearing. Blake Snell could be back in the mix for the Padres once he's done pitching out this season in San Francisco. Says Heyman, Snell is almost sure to decline his $30 million player option. And Snell is of interest to the Padres. Now, according to Heyman, the Padres, along with the Dodgers and some other teams, even inquired about Snell before the deadline this year. But the Giants hung on to Snell. They were much closer to the wild card at that point. Snell has been absolutely, once again, unhittable. This guy, along with being one of our favorite guys, he's just fun to have on the show. He's fun to have in San Diego. Got a great attitude. He's actually just kind of hilarious. I know that Tony really got along well with Blake. And we had some good interviews with him last year. But beyond that, Blake Snell is one of the darndest pitchers I think I've almost ever seen. I mean, I can't think of every pitcher in the history of baseball, but you look at Blake Snell just this year for fun. Just look at it this year. 4 innings, 7 runs. 4 innings, 9 hits, 5 runs. Those are in April. Then in May, 3 innings, 4 runs. 4 innings, 4 runs. Then he only made 1 start in June. 5 innings, 3 runs. None of those were really, really good. Until he came back on July 9th. And then all of a sudden, 5 innings, 1 hit, no runs. 7 innings, 1 hit, no runs. 6 innings, 2 runs. 6 innings, 2 hits, no runs. 9 innings, no hitter. And last time out, 6 1/3, 2 hits, 11 Ks. He has given up 2 runs since he's come back, you know, supposedly healthy with the Giants. And that's in 7 starts. He's given up 2 runs in 7 starts. He's given up 12 hits. The only guy with numbers like that recently is Dylan Cease. Blake Snell is just a, I can't 100% figure it out. The guy's got 2 Cy Young Awards now, 1 in each league. And when he's on, he is the best pitcher in baseball. There's no argument. But there's early in the season, whatever it is. We saw it here in San Diego. Blake, you know, not throwing strikes, falling behind in the count. But man, when he's on, forget it.
Second half Snell.
Second half. I mean, if he came to the Padres again next year, and you were guaranteed that he'd be 2-6 with an ERA of 7 at the All-Star break, but after that he'd go 10-1 with an ERA of 1.22, you'd say, okay, we'll take it. Because he's, you know, he's pitching lights out when it, you know, matters the most. There honestly can't be any hitter in baseball who finds it comfortable to face Blake Snell. It's not like Blake doesn't know where the ball is going, but he has so much movement. They call it stuff. But, you know, he just has so much movement on the ball that it's almost impossible for the hitter to know where it's going. That's why you can't get, you know, the meat of the bat on it at all. You can't get a hit.
I did find it quite interesting that after unloading Jorge Soler, which felt like just a straight salary dump
right.
for the Giants, I found it interesting that they didn't trade Blake Snell at the deadline, given that, as John Heyman reported, it's assumed
teams
around the league.
Teams wanted him, yeah.
Well, not only the teams wanted him, it's assumed that he's going to opt out.
Right. You know what?
The Giants are a 500 team right now.
They are. They won last night to get back to 500. They're currently, 8 games behind the Padres now? Yeah.
8 behind the Padres, 10 behind the Dodgers.
Yeah, they're really nowhere near it. Snell, like certain guys just don't fit in certain places. I'm going back too far. Don't play the song. But Reggie Jackson once spent a year in Baltimore. Like, what? It just doesn't sound right. You know, he was an A, he was an Angel, he was a Yankee. He just never should have been in Baltimore.
I mean, if you remember, my guy John Smoltz spent time with the Red Sox and the Cardinals towards the end of his career.
Right. At the end of the career, it's slightly different because you'll see guys on with a team for a, you know, at the very end. And, you know, Pujols played for a bunch of different teams. But, I mean, in the middle of your career, which I think Snell is in, the Giants just has not been the fit. It just hasn't worked. I don't think he's gotten along with them. I don't think they've gotten along with him. But what he's done... You know, the second half of the season has put his head down and said, you know what, if I pitch great, I'm going to make another $30 million somewhere else next year and I'll feel a lot better.
Do you think that that's ultimately how we'll look back on Juan Soto's career? He had the long stint with the Nationals.
Yes, I think
he spent a year and a half here with the Padres.
Yeah, that's the one.
Spend the rest of his year career with the Yankees.
I think it's a good example. I don't think Soto was a proper fit for the Padres. Yeah, I'm not going to say it was a mistake to go out and get him. I mean, so many things have happened, you know. Guys traded away, guys acquired. But I think you're right. Yeah, I think when you look back, Soto's probably going to be with the Yankees for the rest of his career. I mean, he's just born for that stage. You know, Broadway, New York, the whole thing. Yeah, so you're right. San Diego is the one that kind of is the outlier. All right, Blake Snell, Padres have interest. We always have interest in that. Big Five is coming up next. We're an hour away from the Padres pregame. You don't want to miss it today because I'm filling in on 97.3 The Fan. All right, welcome back to Gwynn and Chris. 3:37 the time, Chris Ello. Tony Gwynn Jr. is in Denver. He's getting ready for the broadcast tonight. He and Jesse Agler will have it. Padres, Rockies, game one, three-game series. Adam Klug in for Scraby, who will return on Monday. Brad from Escondido on the phone line here, jumping in. Hi, Brad.
Hey, gentlemen. How you doing?
We're good. What's up?
Hey. Remember on Blake Snell, though? Like, dude sat out till the very last minute. I think Boros was his agent. Did the same thing to Rhys Hoskins.
Yeah.
So I think Blake may have been pressing it a bit, trying to get back into shape. I'd take him in a heartbeat. I think for you guys, he's the best interview you could ever have.
Yeah, he is good.
Without a doubt. And as regarding Soto, I am so glad he's gone. I'll take a rise any day over Soto. Any day.
You're not I'm not the only one either. Thanks, Brad. You know, I never was a Soto guy. He just isn't not my type of player. Not my favorite. Can he, you know, do all the things that a great baseball player can do? Yeah, but, you know, just never a fan of Soto. But I'm not the only one. I don't think you're the only one, Brad. But a lot of people, you know, say to me, and I don't know if any have said this to you, Adam, but people have said, I think it was addition by subtraction to lose Soto, despite everything that he has put up for the Yankees. Now, there's a lot of people who think, no. You can't. How can you possibly say that? The guy's got 35 home runs. He's got 100 RBIs. He's got 100 runs scored. He's the second or third in the MVP balloting. The Padres would be way better if they had Soto. Well, they also wouldn't have the right payroll. They also wouldn't have, and we can list all the guys, Cease and King and Higashioka and Vasquez and everybody else. But I don't know. Maybe Soto clashed in that clubhouse. I don't really know. I don't have access. But it does seem like there's a little better vibe this year. And not just saying that because they're hot now. I think there's been a better vibe all year.
I don't know that I would say addition by subtraction. I would just use different wording, different semantics, and say the Padres are better off in the position they're in with the depth of pitching that they obtained in exchange for Juan Soto,
right? But I think
and the payroll flexibility
they had to do. So that's, you know, that takes a lot of the argument out of it. But my thinking is, a lot of people are saying this because they perceived that it wasn't a great clubhouse last year. That's people from the outside looking in who don't know, but just having their own perception. We all have perceptions. My perception is that it's without Juan Soto. For whatever reason, because Juan Soto is certainly not a bad guy. Juan Soto certainly didn't create any disturbances that I know of. But I don't know that it was a perfect fit. I just don't. All right, thanks, Brad. We got to check some traffic, and then Adam Klug is prepared for us a Big Five.
It's that time of the show when we check on the latest in sports. Only the most important topics and questions are brought to light.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
These news stories will astound and amaze you. The one, the only.
Oh my God, who the hell cares?
The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, Adam's going to take us through the Big Five. I have to remind everybody that if you love Mediterranean food like I do, Spiro's, that's the place. Authentic Mediterranean cuisine, Coronado, La Jolla, also at Petco Park for dining or takeout options, catering, visit spiroscuisine.com. Are you going to start with number five today or...
Number five.
You could start with number three and just kind of, you know, go a haphazard Big Five.
Without you reminding me, I was already ready to hit five and you comment were. On if you like that I started with the right number.
You were
today.
Good. You were good today. Very good, Adam Klug.
Number five.
All right, number five it is.
Just for good measure.
Yes.
The NL Central leading Brewers received some tough news yesterday when all-star outfielder Christian Yelich announced he'd be undergoing season-ending surgery on his back after initially opting for rest rather than surgery. The Brewers currently have a 9-game division lead, and Yelich has not even played since July 23rd. Assuming the Brewers hold on to make the playoffs, Chris, how scary would they be to an opposing team without Yelich on a scale from 1 to 10, with 10 being the scariest?
I think the Brewers are about a 3. They don't really concern anybody. They just keep winning games. So, you know, Yelich was a big part of that.
He was leading the National League in batting average and on-base percentage.
Yes, he's a 315. His average is even better than Arise's, but Yelich doesn't have a number of bats needed anymore. You know, he's a former MVP player, so that's a big deal. The Brewers, I think, need him to compete with the likes of the Phillies, Dodgers, Padres, etc. in the playoffs. So I think, you know, Yelich being out is a big thing. This is the kind of thing that I wonder about, and I'm not that close to the Yelich and the Brewers and the whole situation, but could he have fought through this at risk to his long-term health? And I say that because I think in this day and age, players are more likely to take care of themselves than they are the team. And I think there was a year and a day way back when that people would have just fought through anything to play and worried about it later.
I have no idea.
I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong, because Yelich makes so much money, and I think the money is the big thing.
He's got the long-term deal.
Yeah.
It's a different situation. I have no idea what you're talking about. Josh Hader.
Okay. You have no idea what I'm talking about.
Number four.
The college football playoff has announced a significant change to how they determine this year's participants. Not only will the sport be expanding to 12 teams, but now the selection committee will not use conference championships as one of its tiebreakers now that the five highest ranked conference champions will earn automatic bids. What do you think of this rule change?
Explain to me what's going to happen now. Georgia goes 13-1, but loses the SEC championship to Missouri.
Well,
Georgia's clearly the higher-ranked team, but Missouri's the SEC champ.
Well, I actually...
They could choose Georgia even though Missouri won. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, I guess... That's a better question, because I know there is an SEC championship game.
I know there is.
So is the winner of that game not the SEC champion?
That's the way I read it.
Look, in college basketball, you've got the regular season champ and the conference tournament champ.
Yeah, this playoff is going to create more issues than people think. Everybody who thinks that now that we have a 12-team playoff, there'll be no controversy is delusional. There's going to be so many controversies just in the SEC alone, because there's going to be four or five teams that think they should get in, and they're not all going to get in. But my point is, if you're going to have an SEC football championship game, why have it if the winner doesn't get to go to the playoff?
Well, the winner will. They're wording it. So here's what I read. The five highest ranked conference champions get automatic bids, and that's just an absolute. So they figured by making it as a tiebreaker, that was double counting it. They don't need to have conference champions as a tiebreaker if they're already guaranteeing the five highest conference champs an automatic bid.
Yeah.
And yes, the winner of the SEC championship game would be the SEC champ, but let's just say if Mississippi State beats Georgia in the SEC championship game. That doesn't mean that Mississippi State would be one of the five highest ranked, depending on where, you know, the group of five champion is. So yeah, that's the point.
My point is, if the Aztecs win the Mountain West,
right,
and they're the highest ranked of all of the other conference champions outside the Fab Four, are they automatically in the tournament?
Yes,
they are.
The five highest ranked conference champions automatically make it in.
So,
and that's why they don't need conference championships as a tiebreaker.
Oh, so you're telling me the Aztecs could go perfect? They're not going to. But the Aztecs could go 12-0, blow out all of their opponents, lose to Boise State in the Mountain West title
and then
game.
They're not a conference champion. They can still make it in, just not with an automatic bid.
Well, they're never going to get an at-large. Okay. As long as the Aztecs still have a chance, I'm not going to worry about the rest of it. But I'm telling everybody that in come December or November, there's going to be complaining from all over the country from teams that don't make the Final 12. It's going to be loud. You thought Florida State whining last year was something? Wait till what happens this year.
Bring it on.
Everybody wants in. Everybody's going to want in.
The Patriots lost to the Eagles 14-13 last night in a game I hope nobody gambled on. Patriots rookie quarterback Drake May, who was selected with the third overall pick in the draft, played more snaps than any other quarterback for the Patriots. May went 6 for 11 for 47 yards, along with 15 rushing yards, including a 4-yard rushing touchdown.
Whoa, I saw that 4-yard rushing touchdown. I could have walked that one in.
There you go.
Yeah.
Earlier today, new head coach Gerard Mayo said that the quarterback competition isn't over yet.
Mike?
This question is an in-general question, Chris, not Patriots-specific with Drake May. Are you in favor of highly drafted rookie quarterbacks playing right away or sitting and learning?
Well, this was an easy question 4 years ago or even 2 years ago.
We're not going to jump in a time machine and ask the question.
I know. We're asking it now. So it's a really tough question now because all of a sudden now kids are coming into the pros, C.J. Stroud last year, others, even, you know, take Brock Purdy. The guys are not resting and having great success right away. You know, I look at Jordan Love. He's now the outlier because he sat out a few years before he got the opportunity.
As did Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes.
Well, that's going way
Patrick
back.
Patrick Mahomes sat out for a year.
Yeah. I think it's great to sit out if you have the right person to learn from. And I think Jordan Love had the right person to learn from because he was under Aaron Rodgers. I don't think it would be helpful to necessarily to Drake May to sit out. Who's he going to watch? Jacoby Brissett?
Yep.
He might as well just play. You know, so I think a lot of it has to do with who's going to be playing instead of you.
Are you saying that context matters?
Context matters. Yes, I am.
Number two.
Ex-Michigan assistant Connor Stallions will be roaming the sidelines again very soon. See what I did there?
Very good. Roaming, yeah. Good.
And sidelines. Remember?
He got it all.
He was at the center of Michigan's sign-stealing scandal last
year. He was the guy that they had a picture of in a Central Michigan hat.
That's right.
Standing on the Central Michigan sideline, stealing stuff. Something that Jim Harbaugh will probably go to his grave denying.
He had no idea about.
Exactly.
Stallions has been hired as the defensive coordinator at Mumford High School in Detroit.
Oh.
Do you have any issues with Mumford High School hiring Connor Stallions?
The only thing I've ever heard from Mumford High School in Detroit, I don't even have anything to do with the high school, but if you watch Beverly Hills Cop, Eddie Murphy in the early part of the movie is wearing a Mumford sweatshirt. I don't know why I just thought of that. And here comes some Beverly Hills Cop music, even.
There you go.
My goodness, you're all of it. I guess in a perfect world, I'd like to see the guy have to pay the price for cheating forever and ever and ever. But, you know, give him a second
chance.
Meaning
he should be expelled.
Yes, just don't ever let him work again. I'm tired of cheaters prospering somewhere else, but I got to give him a second opportunity. Hopefully he learned his lesson and he can do some good with these kids.
Number one.
I'm softening in my old age.
Apparently so, Chris. Yeah. I'm a little disappointed in that response.
I hear you.
This one's more up your alley.
I'm disappointed to give it.
Much has been made about Jason Tatum's reduced role during the Olympics, but the Celtics star said yesterday that his role in these Olympic Games will not impact his decision of whether or not to play in future Olympic Games. What percent chance do you give Jason Tatum of suiting up in the 2028 Olympics?
I would say pretty high. I got to think that Jason Tatum is going to, is really, I said it during, you know, while the Olympics were going on. I think this is really something that Jason Tatum's got to be affected by. He can say whatever he wants. But when you're the highest paid, best player on the world or the world champion team, and you can't even get off the bench, you got to wonder and look in the mirror even and say, what happened here? Where have I gone wrong? And I think anybody with the skill of a Jason Tatum wants to be recognized as the greatest ever, or one of the greats. Well, you know what the argument's going to be right now. Yeah, sure, Jason Tatum's great, but he couldn't even play on the Olympic team. What's that say about this guy? I'm going to think that Jason Tatum wants to get back to the Olympics and wants to play and dominate so that he can, you know, quiet down his critics, of which I'm one, by the way.
Give me a number.
In terms of what, percentage?
Percentage chance.
90.
90.
Yeah, he'd have to get hurt, but he's young. I think he's playing. He'll play, and he'll play a lot next time. He'll probably work it out so that his own Celtic guy coaches the team, whoever's coaching the Celtics. I mean, whatever he's got to do to make sure that Steve Kerr's nowhere nearby. But you know what? Steve Kerr understands the game of basketball pretty good. And Steve Kerr, although he said all the right things, it didn't fit, it wasn't the right combination. Steve Kerr understands Jason Tatum doesn't guard anybody, doesn't set any screens. You know, doesn't do the little things. Steve Kerr knows that those things win. Tatum would respond by saying, I just won the NBA title. But basketball is a more of a me-first game than Steve Kerr was willing to play in the Olympics this year, I think. That's why Jason Tatum didn't win.
Five today on 97.3 The Fan.
Never heard that before. Maybe I have, like, a long time ago. The actual ending of the Big Five.
Do you have, who would you pick to replace Kerr in the next Olympics?
It's the next coach?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. I think it's going to, you know.
There's a favorite out there, I can tell you.
Is there really?
Yeah.
Who is it?
Eric Spoelstra.
Well, he was the assistant this year. Spoelstra's one of the most underrated coaches out there. It could be, but that wouldn't help Jason Tatum get playing time. Spoelstra's a team player. Spoelstra gets more out of a team than just about any coach. I mean, Miami is so under-talented, and yet he always has them right there. I think he's a great coach. That's a good call. You know, Joe Mazzulla, Boston, I give him a lot of credit for figuring out what wins in this day's NBA. But I don't think he ever called a play the whole year. I really don't. Even Tony defended me yesterday and said that Kobe Bryant called it accidental basketball back when he was finishing up his, you know, career, with the notion being that really there are no plays called anymore. Guys just drive in, and whoever happens to pop open because of the help defense is who gets the ball. It's almost by accident. You don't really call a play. All right. That's enough of my NBA harangue. Because I don't think people care that much about Jason Tatum around here. Chris versus the fans, we care about that. That's coming up next. 833-288-0973. Play trivia. You could be on your way to Vegas. Could get to see Carrie Underwood. All coming up later on. Padre baseball and the Rockies. Keep it here on 97.3 The Fan.